Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. In this podcast, we'll explore trends, issues, and events surrounding Lutheran education. In each episode, we'll invite educational experts to shed light on topics that support educators, administrators, and staff. Thank you for listening to LSEM's Lutheran Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, sponsored by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. My name is Richard Schumacher. I am the Director of Programs and Services for LSEM. And today we are joined once again by Dr. Kim Markshausen, the chronically unemployed Lutheran educator who works alongside of us here at LSEM, providing lots of wonderful insights into all things education. Kim, welcome back.
It's great to be here.
And Kara Bratton, the Resource Center Director for LSEM, is also with us this morning again. Kara, good to see you.
Yep. Good morning, Rich. Kim.
In our last podcast, we talked about this concept of there being another way of being smart. And if you've heard Kim speak around the country here lately, you'll know that this is a topic that she's been talking quite a bit about with any number of groups around the country of Lutheran educators. And in our first podcast, which you can find on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you find our podcasts as well, we spoke about unconditional love and the importance that having unconditional love for our students plays in a classroom and how it benefits our students. And so today we're going to talk about the second way, or a second way of the three of being smart, and that one is repentance. So, Kim, let's just start off with kind of a basic kind of re-entry here again. We were looking at socio-emotional skills, or soft skills as you describe them as. Why are they so important to the learning process?
Well, one reason why they're important is because we can't really learn outside of our emotional development. So the way God designed our brain, anything we learn is connected to the environment that we're in and the way we feel on a particular day. So if we're feeling good, then the learning that we have is connected to that good feeling, and that continues to draw us back to more learning. If we feel anxious about what we're doing, our brain is going to work to try to keep us from doing that because it wants to stay away from the kind of things that make us afraid. Now, unfortunately, when our socio-emotional skills are not very well developed, we can become afraid of things that we really shouldn't be afraid of. And we don't always realize that our brain chooses an emotion. Emotions don't just happen to us. The brain chooses that emotion. And so if the brain chooses the wrong one, then it's going to impact our learning. One thing specifically has to do with anxiety. If I'm anxious, it's going to change the way my brain pays attention to the world. If I'm anxious, my brain goes into fight or flight response mode, and it broadens my attention but makes my attention very shallow. It takes in all of the sounds, all of the smells, everything that I can see. I become very easily distracted because I'm looking around to see, is there something that's going to hurt me? Whereas when we're learning, we want a focused attention. And if we are relaxed, if we're in a good mood, then our brain will focus that attention, we'll have a very deep attention, and we can concentrate on the work that we're doing.
And so in a classroom, it's important for teachers to be able to create that relaxed, not a silly sort of environment, not a playful environment, not a, hey, all the kids love me environment, but one where the students are relaxed and comfortable with the roles that everyone plays and with the opportunity to be able to learn. Would you agree?
Right. Children need to have a feeling of belonging so that they know that they can contribute to the class that they're in, regardless of what their skill level is. There's some way that they can contribute to the class, but they know that they're accepted and loved in that classroom, and that they know that there's something in place that will help them to deal with things that make them anxious, such as making a mistake.
And so when it comes to making a mistake, then it's time for the teacher to do what in response to that?
Well, you want to respond to it carefully, because if children have a mindset that if they make a mistake, nothing can be done about it, then they really only have two options. So if they make a mistake and things can't get better, then they're going to feel shame, and they're going to begin to feel like they can't do anything right. And then even if they do something right, their brain is only going to remember those mistakes, so it feeds back into that loop that says, I can't do this. That's especially dangerous for a child with a learning disability. And I would say for many children with learning disabilities, it's not so much a disability as it is they learn in a different way that's not being utilized in the classroom. And so if they think, I can't do it very well and there isn't anything we can do about it, they'll stick in that shame mode. The other option is to just simply deny it or to be proud of it. And so sometimes you see that in a behavior thing where you have a student who says, well, I didn't do that. Or they're happy to get in trouble for doing it. But in both cases, that child just doesn't see that there's another option.
And so this kind of seems like it's leading toward our topic for today, which is that other option in our Lutheran schools, which is teaching children about repentance. So how would you say repentance plays into this, and how does that impact students' learning?
I think it impacts student learning to a great deal. We really live in a world that doesn't like to admit that you've made a mistake. You know, when we think about our leaders in the secular sense, we think it's a weakness if they admit they've made a mistake and they apologize for it. We want that strength that where we just continue doing things regardless of the consequences, and then we put a spin on it to make it look good. We see that in all different aspects of our world, and part of that is because we're a very individualistic society. But real learning has to do with admitting to a mistake and finding the mistake. What's interesting is the research that's been done on people who are highly exceptional in their field. So we're talking about research done, you know, for instance, not just on people who've been in the Olympics, but on the people who've won lots of medals in the Olympics, or not just people who are successful in business, but those people who are successful in starting entrepreneurs, starting new business after new business, the really highly successful people. One characteristic that is true of all of those people is that they are willing to admit they've made a mistake, and that they see that making that mistake is an opportunity to learn. So they're successful in our world because they're thinking in a very different way. Instead of hiding a mistake or ignoring a mistake, they're bringing it out into the open and looking at it.
So would you say that students who go into school who have this mindset that mistakes are just bad, they're wrong, we have to fight to spin anything we can to avoid making a mistake, would you say that those students are on a path that might lead to some problems down the road?
Well, I don't think they have to get down the road for it. I think they've got problems right there. So imagine that kind of situation where I don't have a way of dealing with the mistake. Right there, I've got higher anxiety. If I know I can admit to a mistake, my anxiety level can come down. It doesn't mean I like making a mistake, but I know that there's something that can be done about it. This connects very strongly to the idea of resilience. And sometimes resilience is referred to as grit, that kind of perseverance and being able to stick with something.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that if you can't admit to making a mistake. And if you never try something that might cause a mistake, then you're not going to grow or learn.
Seems to me like a student would also run into a problem in terms of, in terms of being kind of labeled as a liar or dishonest if they can't admit to the mistake and then so vehemently try to deny it when clearly it's just a mistake. I imagine that would lead to all sorts of crazy stories to try and cover it up.
Yeah, it certainly does in terms of behavior. And in terms of academic learning, it can become a blame thing. So I didn't do very well on the test because the teacher doesn't like me. I mean, I've even heard that in working with undergrads. I'm no good at that kind of test. Well, we can always get better at that kind of test. Or we can talk to the teacher about finding another way to show what we've learned. But if you're blaming something else, then there's no reason to look at it. That can then lead to what we call a self-fulfillment prophecy, which is students making mistakes on purpose because it's easier to say, well, I just didn't have time to get that done, than to say, I might not have done it perfectly. So this can even impact students who do very well academically. And I've seen students like that at the college level when finally they're getting to a point where something challenges them. And now they dive into procrastination. I remember talking to a particular student who didn't get a paper handed in and reminding him that there was a grace period that, you know, he'd miss some points, but he could still hand it in. And he was disappointed to hear that because I believe because he preferred to have the excuse, I just didn't get it done, than to hand in something less than perfect.
You're listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, sponsored by LSEM, and we're talking with Dr. Kim Markshausen today, talking about the importance of repentance and the impact that it can have on student learning. Kim, it seems that a lot of things that influence, especially younger kids in the classroom, have a start at home. And how do parents play a role in this, allowing their children to either accept and receive repentance when they admit something being wrong, or, as we've been talking about here, offer up excuses or other rationales or point blame at other people?
Yeah, it is dangerous when parents try to intervene on behalf of a child who really needs to have a consequence, because they're giving the child maladaptive coping skills. They're telling them, instead of admitting that you make a mistake and learning from it, it's better if you try to manipulate your way out of it. Frequently when I talk to parents, I talk about the value of children hearing no, that it's important for them to know that even when their parents are saying something that they don't want to hear, that their parents still love them. And if a parent never tells a child no, if a parent doesn't hold a child accountable, doesn't walk them through the repentance and forgiveness process, then that child has no experience that tells them, my parents still love me even when I make a mistake. So they are, in fact, learning that when their parents try to cover up for their mistake or do their work for them or argue them out of a bad grade, they're learning we cannot admit that we've made a mistake.
And you mentioned forgiveness in there, Kim. How important is forgiveness when it comes to teaching children to look for and to utilize repentance?
Well, it's absolutely essential, and it's what makes us different as Lutheran teachers, because we have that grace aspect, and not only being able to say you're forgiven, but also remembering that this is a part of a God process, and that the Spirit is there with us, helping us to learn. I like to mention about sanctification, because as Lutherans, we focus a lot on justification. We focus on how Jesus died and rose again, and now we are justified. We have the robes of righteousness as we, you know, head into heaven. But God didn't stop there. He could have. He could have said, justification's enough. Now go live your miserable life, and I'll see you when you die. But he didn't. He also sends his Spirit, and he sanctifies us, sets us apart, and the Spirit works in us. And that's a powerful lesson for children, that the beginning of that process is being able to admit you pulled yourself away from God. And so now God is pulling you back to him and helping you to learn and grow.
So what then, with all of this conversation in regards to repentance and forgiveness and unconditional love, What then do we do in a situation where, say, you have a student who has done something wrong and you're in that position where they now need to apologize to somebody, but they are just saying the words, but there's really no meaning to it? I mean, we've seen this played out in television and movies, and again, I think probably every person on the planet has been marched in front of a sibling to say, now say you're sorry. What do you do in a case like that?
Sorry is accompanied by a nice big eye roll, which indicates a pretty strong indication that it's not meant. I had an interesting conversation when I was a graduate student with a fellow graduate student who was working with the Early Childhood Department of State Nebraska. And we had a discussion about this because she would go to early childhood centers and she had, you know, her assessment program that she had to go through. We had an argument about that very thing, because here in Nebraska, if this person comes to inspect your licensed facility and a teacher makes a child apologize, then you as a facility get a demerit.
Really?
That's considered to be a bad thing to do because you're forcing children to feel a way that they don't naturally feel. And we had a long discussion about it because I'm not really sure how I feel about it. So even from my own teaching, I didn't always make that happen. But yet, something in my heart told me you can't just simply ignore it. And so often in our life, we just say something before we really believe it or understand it. And I think it's important for children to know that they hurt someone, and even if they don't believe it, to be able to say that they're sorry. But I think even beyond that, it's more important for that child to learn some sort of atonement. So that you say to that child, well, you've hurt this child here at recess, and you're angry, and you're not feeling sorry, but we have a child who's been hurt by you. So I'm going to ask you to take that child inside to go to the secretary to get the ice bag and the Band-Aid, and that makes everything better. That's that act of atonement. And in that process, then the child maybe starts to learn what I did hurt this child.
It seems to me also, and again, I don't have anywhere close to the same level of research in the topic as you, but it seems to me also that when you're doing that, you're opening that child's eyes to a bigger picture of your actions have an impact beyond just yourself. You know, there are other people who are involved in this, which is a life lesson that goes beyond just a simple dust up on the playground, but has impacts, you know, in life, and when we work, when we have relationships, when we're parenting, lots of things where, again, today's action here in one sense is going to have a ripple effect into so many other places.
Well, certainly it does, because we don't learn things in big lessons. We learn things in layers.
Right.
So the more often this happens, whether that child is the perpetrator or the victim or an observer, they'll see it from three different perspectives. And then together, that helps them to develop that idea of empathy. So I can realize that I've done something that hurts you because I can see that you are hurting. So there's empathy again, and that kind of understanding.
And I think as Christians that the development of empathy is really important because, again, it allows us to be able to take our faith to that next step where it's not just a relationship that I have with God where He's forgiven me and He's saved me, but now I look outward to others and try to help meet their needs and to help bring them to that same relationship with Christ.
And from a secular standpoint, what you're describing there is a natural development of morality. So that a child, a very young child, their morality is all about how does this impact me? Mm-hmm. And so from a young child's perspective, I'm going to go ahead and say I'm sorry and do this thing because if I don't, there'll be a negative impact on me. But as they grow in their moral development, they start to understand, well, you know what? Our classroom is a better place when we care about each other and when we apologize for things that we've done wrong. And that gradually expands to the point where we can understand we're going to follow laws that we don't agree with because that's part of what keeps us safe. Or we can get to an even higher state where we can say, I can do something for someone else even though I'm not rewarded for it, just because I understand that it's right. And we're getting close to that Bible verse that talks about a friend who will lay down their life for someone else. Yeah. That's the ultimate stage of moral development.
You're listening to Dr. Kim Markshausen on the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in just a moment after this message from LSEM.
Lutheran Special Education Ministries is an organization committed to serving schools, churches, and families to advance the success of children who have learning needs. Our commitment to this mission began with the opening of the Lutheran School for the Deaf in Detroit. Over the years, our ministry has expanded, and today LSEM is proud to serve in Lutheran schools across the country. But as our ministry has grown, our commitment to helping students succeed academically in an environment where they can also grow spiritually is as strong as ever. So if your church or school is looking for professional development for your faculty, information to share with struggling families, or for a ministry partner to support an existing resource room or start a new one, LSEM is ready to help you meet your specialized learning goals. For more information about how LSEM can help you build brighter futures for your students, please contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. That's www.luthsped.org.
Welcome back to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries again. I'm Rich Schumacher alongside Kara Bratton, and we're talking with Dr. Kim Markshausen, the chronically unemployed but Lutheran guru of all things educational. That is her formal title. I saw it on a business card somewhere around here. Kim, we're talking about another way of being smart and focusing on repentance. Such a critical thing that we need to be able to do in our classrooms and with our children, and I think with just everybody in life in general. So let me ask you this question here. A lot of schools nowadays have put a pretty strong emphasis on testing and the results that can come from testing. Data is important, but you're saying that testing sometimes gets too much of a premium and something else that's more important gets overlooked. Explain that for us.
Well, we've really become very much a testing-oriented educational system since the onset of No Child Left Behind and the other things that have come since then. And my degree is in educational psychology, so I have a strong background in assessment, and I understand that assessment is important. But it seems to me that we're putting way too much faith in those tests to tell us everything that we need to know. There are so many other ways of evaluating how a student is learning and growing. And when we look at testing, and we only look at testing, or we make it such a strong thing, then we're creating what's called a performance orientation rather than a mastery orientation. So in learning, if you have a performance orientation, you're only thinking about that ultimate performance. You're not thinking about what it takes to get there, that it takes work to get there, for instance, that it takes making mistakes and learning from mistakes. You're just thinking about that performance. And I think unconsciously as teachers, we relay that to students when we mention how important the test is. I remember 1 year when I was teaching kindergarten in the morning and I was teaching fourth, fifth, and sixth grade language arts in the afternoon. It sometimes happens in our good Lutheran schools. We get stretched a little bit. And I had to give achievement tests. Well, I haven't had given achievement tests for quite a long time. I had a disastrous experience with them when I taught first grade, and I talked the principal out of it. I think I just complained to him about so much that he just let me drop them. But so here I am giving fourth, fifth, and sixth graders achievement tests, and I remember telling them, what we need to remember about this test is that it's going to tell us more about how the teachers are doing teaching you and how our curriculum is working than it's going to tell us about where you're at. And that's really true of a standardized test. it's a blunt instrument in that respect. And I had the parent of one of the kids in the class talk to me later and say, just saying that made such a difference for my daughter. She just relaxed and she didn't worry so much about taking the test. Well, that's that switch. I mean, her daughter is one who was had a mastery orientation. It was important for her to learn. It was less important for her to do well in regards to her peers. It was more important for her to be making progress. We do have to be careful about that because kids need to have both kinds of orientation.
And Kara, in the special education world at LSEM, you're dealing with a lot of assessments and students needing to provide you with data so you can best deal with them. How do you balance that?
Well, I think back to what Kim said earlier with that higher anxiety coming when students don't see that there's an option to make a mistake. And I think to kind of second what she said, I think some of the states with higher stakes testing, for instance, I'm in Indiana and we have the iRead 3, which all third graders are given, and it's a reading assessment. And if you don't pass, you either retake the exam. If you don't pass again, you have to stay in third grade for reading. So students see that as a very black and white. I either passed or I didn't. And even parents I talk to, they see it that is very black and white. It doesn't matter if their child came within 2 or 3 points of passing. The fact was, well, they didn't pass. So it is that, like, okay, there's no option. You know, if I make a mistake, that's just it. You know, it doesn't matter how close I got. So I think it gets very discouraging for kids, that high stakes testing as opposed to the assessments, where, you know, like Kim was saying, that you can talk to a child and say, you know what, this test isn't for a grade. It doesn't matter so much. It just is so I can see what you're learning. And our teachers, I know, have found those types of assessments, the more informal, the more curriculum-based assessments, to be more beneficial in that way, because a lot of times children don't see that as a pass or fail. It's just, this is where I am, and this is going to give me information so my teacher can help me where I am, as opposed to this test is going to decide if I'm in third or fourth grade next year.
And again, I can speak to that too from a principal standpoint, because when I was principal, Kim wasn't on my staff, so she didn't talk me out of doing assessment tests for my kids. But there's a lot of pressure on the teachers as well, because they feel, as they're looking at the class composites from year to year, they're wanting to see improvement. They're wanting to see that what they're teaching is validated in the test scores that are there. And so as they're looking at it, engaging their performance, and I did my best to not make our testing a high stakes thing. It's not like jobs were on the line or state funding was on the line like many teachers face. But there is pressure that we put on ourselves. And even in that case, too, if the teacher's not careful, pressure that they put on themselves can and will trickle down to the classroom. And comments that get made of, we need to really work on this because it'll help you on your test, students are perceptive to that. They pick up on those things, and that can build that foundation, which again, as that parent said to you, Kim, what a wonderful reassurance you gave to your students when you told them, this is measuring me, not you. But it's easy for kids to get that wrong message in the way we conduct ourselves day to day in the classroom.
Yeah, I really like Kara's input that this kind of assessment should be about finding the best way to meet the needs of that child. It shouldn't be about ranking. And I think if we can change that kind of mindset, that we're not ranking teachers, that we're not ranking schools, that we're not ranking students, but we're learning more about what they can and cannot do, I think we put testing not only in a better perspective, but we would use it better. But the way we're doing it now, you don't get a chance to learn from it too often, is what I think. You know, like the example that Kara gave about these third graders, whether or not they're going to pass to fourth grade, what are they learning from that test? How, you know, it's not telling them how they can improve.
So, Kim, how then do we take all that, how do we create an environment that in a healthy way helps kids and teachers deal with failure and mistakes?
Well, Terry, you and I are both fans of growth mindset, and so this might be a good time to bring that in. Growth mindset is Carol Dweck's theory, and she's done some excellent research on that over probably about a 20-year period. I really like the research that she's done because she does good experimental studies with it. But what she's determined is that it's important for children to have a growth mindset to be able to learn. And so if they have a fixed mindset, it's very much like what we were talking about earlier, where children who don't know about repentance and growth will think that a mistake is an indictment and that it can't, that nothing can be done about it. But when we move children toward a growth mindset, which we can do beautifully through that process of repentance and forgiveness and the growth of sanctification. So we're showing them about a growth mindset that goes very deep. That's not just about learning. It's about our relationships with each other, too. When we do that, we give children the possibility that they can get better. They can get better at reading. They can get better at math. They can get better at focusing. They can get better at relationships. That it's there, and the teachers and their fellow students are there to help them with that.
And if I can chime in with one of my favorite examples of growth mindset, like Kim said, we've had many conversations about this, but I have at the time, she was a four-year-old niece who just naturally took to math. So I always tell my brother she was kind of like me. She was she just loves math. But I was riding in the car with her on a 12-hour trip down to Florida. And we were in the back seat, and she just said, okay, give me adding problems. So I was just giving her addition problem after addition problem, and she was getting them. So then I moved on to giving her some addition problems where the answer was a double-digit number, or where if she was actually writing it down, she might have had to regroup to figure it out, even though she didn't know what she was doing yet. So I gave her some of those problems, and it kind of stumped her after one or two. And so she kind of stopped and she said, I should know this. Because she was just used to knowing the answer and not used to having to approach a problem that, okay, what do I do when I don't know the answer? As Kim alluded to earlier, sometimes that challenge can hit kids young, and sometimes it can hit them when they're in high school, that they don't know how to approach the problem. Well, since she was four, but this would work with high schoolers too, I took that opportunity to talk with her about, you know what, you don't have to know the answer to every problem. This is a good time for your brain to grow, for your brain to learn. So, let's figure out how could we figure out the answer, and then that'll help you in the long run. And so, we kind of sat and talked her through that. I gave her another problem, and she kind of sat for a minute because, again, she didn't know the answer, and she said, okay, it's okay. This is helping my brain grow. And a four-year-old, it was just comical because you could tell she was kind of frustrated because she hadn't really been challenged before with math. And now fast forward, she's almost 9 years old, and she's really kind of kept that growth mindset where she's a bright little girl. Things come easily to her, but she doesn't give up when she encounters something that's difficult, even for her. She has that growth mindset. She looks at it and kind of embraces the challenge and knows that she can figure it out, or tries to figure out how she can get close to figuring out, as opposed to that, the fixed mindset of saying, well, I don't know this, so I just must not be good at math. So I think even kids I work with learning disabilities and different learning needs, having that growth mindset makes a world of difference, because even if they don't know it, they'll keep at it and they'll figure out and use strategies to get to where they need to be, and kind of keep plugging away, as opposed to just saying, well, I don't know this, so I must be stupid, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I love how she was talking to herself, too, and saying it out loud. This is helping my brain to grow. That's really a pivotal moment in her learning, because she's going to be able to apply that to other things too. She's going to start to recognize, and as you said, now as a 9-year-old, she's got so much more confidence. I think about my son who had learning disabilities because he had epilepsy, and his learning disabilities were very strange because it had to do with the he had several bad spots in the brain that would cause seizures, and his brain had to work around those bad spots, but then that also impacted how he learned, and we could never predict what was going to be a problem. And one problem for him was learning multiplication facts. I mean, we worked and worked and worked at that. He must still be sick of me if I'd ever get out any kind of a math game. That's multiplication facts. He's 25 now. He's probably still running from that. But we worked on that for several years and finally found a way to do it. Well, the impact that that had was that when he got to college and he had difficulty with something, he had a list of different things to try. And he knew, if I just keep at it, I can do it. And what a wonderful gift for your niece that you had that opportunity to teach her that.
And I agree. I think that's such an important thing to instill in our kids, because in essence, what you're doing here is you're allowing yourself repentance. You're allowing yourself to forgive yourself when you don't have the answer immediately, when you don't have the work done in the way that you wanted to. I mean, we sometimes put so much pressure on ourselves that it creates that problem. In a previous position, I was working with student teachers, and I'll never forget this one gal that I was working with. She was student teaching in a high school setting, and long story short, the one teacher she was working with was nearing retirement, had kind of reached that point where they were coasting and just kind of counting the minutes until they were done. So in terms of energy and content and new things, the student teacher was really excelling in comparison to the cooperating teacher. And then in math, she was working with a real solid teacher with a great reputation and a solid structure in the classroom. And she was struggling pretty heavily there because she wasn't the bright shining light. She was the novice teacher who wasn't cutting the mustard as well as she wanted to. And she was really struggling in that scenario. And I just sat down with her after hearing about all of this and talking with the teachers. And I just asked her a simple question. Have you ever allowed yourself the opportunity to fail? And she sat and thought for a few seconds and quite honestly said, no, why should I? And it sparked a conversation where we could say, look, you know, you're not going to be Hall of Fame class every hour of every day, and it's okay. Now, it's not okay to stay there. It's not okay to accept that. But when something goes wrong, you know, you just kind of have to look at it as a one-time thing or laugh at it, make a note, learn from it, but, you know, get that forgiveness from whomever is impacted by it, and certainly get that forgiveness from yourself so then you can move on. And like you did with your son, Kim, giving him the steps that he needed to be able to forgive himself and then work around whatever was coming up is brilliant. And Kara, next time I'm in a board meeting, I plan to just say when the board asks me a question I can't answer, this is a way for my brain to grow. So I learned a great deal from this. So as we put a wrap on the conversation here, Kim, if anybody listening wants to reach out to you to get more information or to continue the conversation with you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, they're welcome to Google my name and find my website where they can email me, or they can email me directly at kim@markshausen.net.
And Kara, if somebody wants to reach out to get more information about you or Lutheran Special Education Ministries?
Well, we have a great website, luthsped.org, where you can find more information about us, as well as shoot an email that will find its way to me, or my direct email is kbratton@luthsped.org.
Okay. Well, ladies, thank you both for your time today. It's been great insight and great learning as well. And thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries.
Oh, Lord, my God, I know you.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. To hear future episodes, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. For more information on this episode's topic or any other questions regarding Lutheran education or Lutheran Special Education Ministries, please feel free to contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.